Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
Good day, everyone. How is your week going? I know you have been expecting this particular episode for the past 2 weeks, but like the mail that was sent, for those who have been subscribed, who we have the email addresses, we told you the issues we had. We had a bad internet connection, but hopefully we have fixed it. So thank you all for always listening. So today on A to D African Forum episode 4, we are going to be talking about a very, very crucial and salient topic. And what we are going to be talking about today is tribalism and religion, the Trojan horse. And now, for those in Nigeria here, we have seen the negative consequences of tribalism and religious bigotry. Like we saw the clash between the Northerners and the Westerners in Ibadan. And even across the globe, even across the continent, even across Europe and Americas, we have seen tribes hating other tribes. So today we are going to be talking about how tribalism and how religious bigotry has impeded and precluded the advancement of Africa as a continent, Nigeria as a country, and other African countries. So the person who is joining me to talk about this very salient topic is Hamid. And Hamid has been here before. We spoke about who to blame. Current leaders of Colonial Masters, you can go and check it out on our, this was episode 2. So Hamid, thank you very much for being here once again. So when we talk about tribalism and religion bigotry, what is the first thing that comes to your mind, and what is the best way you can paint the picture of tribalism and religious bigotry?
Hello, Kelechi. Hello, good evening, everyone. So the first thing that comes to mind when you say tribalism and religious bigotry is intolerance. Yeah. That's a big picture.
True.
It is a situation where people use a certain characteristic that defines their group, social group,
yeah,
and use that as a means to attack another group that they deem different from they are.
True.
So obviously we're going to be talking about it in the African context,
yeah,
to see exactly why is this a Trojan horse for us. It means, why is this, we are underdeveloping, and could this be a reason why that is happening?
Yeah.
Will this be like the secret enemy within that is working assiduously to reduce every progress we make?
Yeah.
So first of all, I just want to start with the caveat that in discussing my point of view of tribalism and religion, it's from the perspective of, it is impossible,
mm-hmm,
to say that every person or in every community that exists in the world, we eliminate these identifications, these identifiers.
I agree with
it's
you.
Not possible. You can't say that, oh, for us to be united, for us to have development, for us to have peace, it can only happen when there is no such thing as tribe or religion. Everybody is on the same group. We are all identified as one. There is no such thing as white, black, Hispanic. We are all true, human.
True.
That maybe it is when we get to that level, that's when we can get real peace.
True.
So honestly, I'm not a sociologist to say, okay, this is possible or not. But from what I know about human beings, and I am a realist,
yeah,
that's not possible. You can never achieve this.
True.
It's simply not possible to...
It's a utopianistic type of thinking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the same that saying that we're going to delete everything as everybody's name. Nobody will have a name. we'll just be called you. It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not possible. So that's a caveat. It's not possible to remove these things. They exist. Now the question is, can we develop with them? And why does it manifest in a different way here in Africa than you see in other places? Is it the case of Africans take these regions and religion and trap them to a whole new level where other countries are able to shun it and move beyond it? Is this the case or not?
So just to corroborate your point and to in that same line answer the question of why is it different? I think across, like you have said, I think across the globe we have different tribes and ethnic groups and different groups of people, like racially, politically, or maybe in class. We have been able to group people categorically under a certain group of people, under a particular section. And yes, we have countries that are pretty much as cultural and diverse as Africa. We have Americans, you have the Latinos, you have the Black Americans, Asian Americans. We have different cultures in America. If you go to India, the same thing. You get the biggest problem I have seen as regards to tribalism and religion in Africa today is it's becoming a political tool. The truth is, I'm not saying that people shouldn't appreciate their culture. I'm not saying that people shouldn't appreciate their faith. I'm not saying that people shouldn't love the people from their cultural or ethnic group more. What I am saying is, it has become a kind of what I would say a kind of political identity politics per se. So you would notice that every development that has been made in Africa, in Europe, in every part of the world, has come from a consensus of different cultures. And most times, because of this consensus, the people who are manipulating the people do not benefit from this. So I believe it's one of the biggest political tools and political maneuvers that politicians and the elites use in order to exploit the people mentally and financially.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think if you look at Nigeria from the day we got our independence up to today,
yeah,
our leaders and the political actors have always used ethnicity and religion to sort of classify us.
Exactly.
And then set us against one another, because that's the only way you can say, oh, this person is not one of us.
Yeah.
By saying this does not belong to this, right? And that's really a key way to, you know, galvanize people against one another.
Yeah.
And again, in Africa, now I want to just take a step back.
Yeah.
To see why is this the case now? If you look at Africa, if you look at Black people, you see that the definition of who they are is a lot more pronounced than the R you have for Caucasians in particular. Now, when I want to say Caucasian, not white people, because you still have brown people being also classified. You have that is the Hispanics and the Spanish, that is the people of the Spanish descent. And then you have the Arabs who also have a very deep-rooted tribalism amongst them. Even up to today, it still plays in their politics. So I want to take a very good look at white Caucasians and Black people. Now, if you go back to the white people now, you see that they also have a lot of different tribes that they have. You have the Russians, you have the Polish, you have the Italians, you have the Swedes, the Scandinavians, the Germans. These are all different types of whites. But you see, what the white person was able to do is to, you know, call all these different shades or features of white as just white. There's nothing like Polish white or German white or this. No, that is one of the tools they use in their colonization efforts. Now, you see, when it came to Black, they had to be different. No, you are Swahili, no, you are Hausa, no, you are Tiv. It can't be that you're all Black. Even when they are doing even during apartheid, they didn't classify what white was, but they classified what Black was. And even the Black, they was classified according to the shade. If you are a little bit too white, you're colored. Yeah, if you are Latin in South Africa, then if you are very dark, then you are Black. So again, you see that really, again, I'm not saying that colonialism is the only reason why tribalism exists, no. But in the form it is today and in the way it has been used to push Africa to where it is today,
true,
is as a result of colonization, in which...
I agree with you. So I agree, yes, with you. And you know, like you said, I'm not trying to say this is the only reason, but to be honest, yeah, with you, I'm beginning to feel like it is one of the main pivotal reasons. Because if you look back at the Berlin Conference and how they just sketched out Africa, you know, some group of white people from countries across Europe and the Americans, you know, they just sketched out Africa without considering cultural differences and similarities, right? So
yes,
we are being grouped already in quotes, we are being grouped in countries with people who we do not share cultural similarities with. But again, but thinking about it in that same light, I also see across all African cultures, I see similarities. I see very distinct similarities. For example, in Nigeria today, we have over 250 ethnic groups. One thing where you can agree that is similar across all cultures in Nigeria is respect. Is respect. Do you get so in the Western world? Respect may mean you laying down flat to greet your father or your mother. In the Igbo land, it may mean something else. In the Hausa land, it may mean something else. But what is central to us is respect. What is central to us is family values. What is central to us is cultural values. So again, looking at it in the present time of Nigeria, you see that we are all the same. We are all the same. We are all the same in the sense that we all have this moral law that connects all of us together. There is nothing that is so distinct about the Igbo culture that impedes the progress of the Northerners. There was nothing in the Northern culture that impedes the progress of the Southerners. There was nothing in our culture that precludes the advancement of another culture. So if you look at it again, I can't say this is colonialism, but I can still also say, well, this could also be colonialism. So that's why I base my entire point on the political strategy and maneuvering of our political actors, like you said. So it's just a bit of black and white. For example, if we are even going to talk more about culture and faith, you are aware of the xenophobic attack of against Nigerians in South Africa. For what reason? For what reason? So again, what is the dichotomy between the South African culture or the South African cultural values and the Nigerian cultural values? What is the difference? So that is just my own take on colonialism, basically to colonialism or political maneuvering.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Kelechi. The truth is we do have more in common than we have. We do have more things that unite us than things that differentiate us.
Exactly.
If you look at our cultures, the fabric of the culture, how they are built, yes, the beliefs might be different, the superstitions might be different, but at the root of it, how families are operated,
exactly,
how communities help one another. Like if you go deep down into the West or the East, you see the same things. And the question is, why do we see each other as being so different? And the simple answer for me is lack of development. Because you see, the thing is, we are all fighting over a limited amount of development.
I agree.
Now, I'm not saying resources here, because in most cases, you find that communities ignore their resources and focus on the one thing that brings them the quickest livelihood. So, for example, you can find a community that has a deposit of tin, maybe even some gold, but because it is a farming community, nobody cares about anything else. They just farm. They want to farm. If they are all farming maize, they want to farm as much maize as they can so they can sell and they can make their money. nobody wants to look at the other things. That, why am I saying all these things? It's because the reality is, wherever you find conflict in the world today, look at the history, go back in time. Whenever you find conflict for a very long time over like two groups of people, you find that there is almost always an issue of resources. There's a limited amount of resources, and one group wants to have control over the resources where they can decide what happens to it. Now, here in Nigeria and in Africa, you find that the developments are focused in small pockets of locations or of places. For example, in Kaduna now, or you go to, maybe let's go to Kaduna. You find that Kaduna City itself is very developed compared to maybe a place like Sango, or a place that's like that's one of the small rural areas. You go there, you wonder, how are people surviving?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a small village I went to in Gombe, Biliri. I went around the town and I just noticed that there was a lot of commercial activity there. And then I asked the person who was taking me around, I asked him, what is the commercial activity that these people are doing? What are they doing to make money? And he said there was nothing he couldn't think of. He said, they farm some grains that they use for alcohol, but that's the only thing they do. And even that is seasonal. And yet I could see big shops. And the only thing you could tell is because there was a secretariat there.
Wow.
So you can see that there's a few slots for government recruitment there, which means everybody in that small, in that big town is fighting for that small slot. So obviously it's going to be an issue of, no, you can't give this person because this person is not, you know, an indigent. This is a foreigner. We need to take the jobs because we need the money more than they do. So when you have issues like this, a lack of sufficient development, people are going to argue, people are going to fight to take over the little that is available so that they can sustain themselves. Honestly, for me, that's the way I see the conflicts around Africa, around, you know, around a lot of tribal issues that you are seeing.
Yeah.
That's the way I view it.
Yeah, you made a very, very vital point. And to be honest with you, I've never thought about it in this light, right? About the resources. Yeah. Because in 2006, 2005, Dangote and Otedola bought a refinery in Port Harcourt for $400 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he was going to the oil and the oil industry then, so he bought it because, I mean, what's the point of building a new refinery if you have one that isn't working or that is about to, that is about to be obsolete? So they bought it and you cannot imagine the outcry from people of the South that there is no way that this is a national asset, that you cannot sell our national asset to private people, and not even that you're selling it to people that are, you're not selling to rivers people or people from the South. You're selling it to the North.
Yes.
And you're selling it to the West. And you know, the true tantrums are not, and then president of Obasanjo was like, so what are you guys talking about? This is going to help us. Yeah. We import fuel. This is going to help us. They, you know, and Obasanjo being a very strong man, didn't really consider it. But Raduwa came in, Raduwa being a very peaceful person, and you know, now said, you know what, fine. Raduwa reversed the sale, gave Otedola and Dangote back their $400 million, and you know, gave the refinery back to, in quote, the people of Port Harcourt. Do you know, till today, that refinery has not produced a single drop of fuel, petrol, or oil produce. Till today. And now, what's his name? Dangote has now moved to Lagos to now start building a new refinery. A new refinery with pipelines connected from Lagos to Port Harcourt. So what you have made a very, very, very important point. And this is going to lead you to I'm going to derail because of the point you have raised. You see, one of the most important things about peace is the comfortability of the parties in that particular scenario. Do you understand? So the moment that we as the Igbo people are able to say, okay, this is what we have, this is what we are able to live with, this is what we produce, this is who we are, this is how we can control our economy, And the Northerners are able to say, okay, this is how we can control our own economy. And the Westerners are saying, this is how we're going to control our own economy. Then there is not going to be a, you won't see the diatribe of, oh, you are coming over here to take my resources. No, it has never been that way. Because what you will notice is this. What you notice is this. People in the South are saying, we are the ones that make the money for the country. The oil, we're the ones that produce the oil. And what they quickly forget is that they don't eat oil, they eat food. Now, but where does the food come from? Where does major of the food in Nigeria come from? It comes from the north. Okay, you're saying, well, but the truth is this, we all have something in common, and we all have something that the other person has to give. So your point on resources is very, very, very important. And I haven't even looked at it in that direction, because when you look at it across the entire history of humanity, resources, the lack of resources has been the main reason for conflict. The lack of resources has been the main major reason for conflict. And that is why in the Americans, you would see that, I'm going to make another point, and then we cannot progress in this conversation. In America today, people talk so much about racism. They talk so much about racism, talk so much about how the white man sees the black man as subhuman. But in my own understanding of, based on what I've read, I feel like the core issue in the Americas today is due to the lack of resources available to the black man, or that was available to the black people. So because of that, the black people automatically think that they have been marginalized, or they have been duped. So when the resources are there, then you would have less conflict to deal with. So now the question is this. Thank you for raising that important point. The question is this: how do we solve this issue? Now we have seen the problem, we have been able to analyze the problem. Now the question is this: how do we solve it?
So I think for me, right, the way I see a solution, and this is something I usually picture, and what do I do when I become the president? Like, what will be the things I will do? And again, just before I get into this solution, what?
Do you plan on running for president?
Running, no, not preemptively. Maybe if it gets to a point where I feel like, no, I can't let the country continue like this, I have to do something. But
yeah,
as of right now, I don't feel I have to run. I feel like I need to do something to support the government in or the communities, as the case may be. And again, the point you made about Nigeria, right, and the fact that the South and the North are in a form of a symbiosis that we don't even acknowledge. Now, when I hear people talk about we need to segregate, we need to divide the country and things like that. And I was thinking that, you know what, even if Nigeria was not created as Nigeria, mm-hmm. because of the nature of trade we have, the location of the South and the climate of the North, we will end up with a sort of a trade agreement between the North and the South that will form in essential what Nigeria is. So without the country Nigeria, because of trade, we will still end up the way we are today, because the North cannot get certain things out of the country or into their region without access to the ports.
True.
You can't bring everything through your planes, so you have to use the ports, and the ports are predominantly in the South. True. And the South won't have the climate to produce everything that they eat, mm-hmm. which means they need to look inward to somewhere that is drier mm-hmm. to get what they need. And even if to get it from places further away, like Niger and places like that, they will still have to go to Nigeria, mm-hmm. to the northern part of Nigeria. So in essence, our problem is not that we were forced to become Nigeria. Our problem is because we refuse to identify the reason why we are not where we need to be in terms of development. And this is where I see the solution for us. The solution is, for me, to be very honest, is in two parts. Number one, with the leaders, and number two, with us. Let me start with us.
Okay.
As normal citizens, as normal members of community, you have to realize that your next door neighbor is not the reason why you are not where you want to be in terms of development.
Thank you.
If you're not rich, it's not because your next door neighbor is sharing the salary that you're supposed to get. Whatever you think you are, you're not going to be able to do the work of three people at the same time. It's not possible. You can only do the work of one person.
True.
And you can't bring all your family to be doing the same thing. How will you diversify?
Mm-hmm.
So your problem is not your neighbor, be it within your compound, within your community, within your street, within your state, it's not your neighbor or within your country. The problem is you need to work together to develop where you ever you find yourself. Now, you also have to realize that because you don't know how to do everything is not a problem. You don't have to learn everything. You don't have to be an expert in everything. You just have to be an expert in something and collaborate with others.
Mm-hmm.
It's very obvious that certain ethnic groups are have more propensity to certain traits or certain attributes than others.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that everybody in that ethnic group has that and everybody in this particular ethnic group doesn't have it. No. What I'm saying is that some groups are more likely to be able to do certain things better than others. Mm-hmm. It's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Now, understanding this helps us to live better as a community, understanding that this is my neighbor, supporting him eventually supports myself as well. If this person is able to build a car, and this car is able to sell it to somebody,
mm-hmm.
that Forex comes into the country, which is going to help you when you need Forex to buy something. This is the way you should look at development. Now, in terms of the leaders, we have to, the way Nigerian leaders usually work is that whenever there's a need to divert attention from their shortfalls, they rely on region or ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And the reason why this always works is because the people are so ready and they are so, you know, on the edge of fighting somebody that they are anxious to attack someone, to blame someone. Now, mm-hmm. whenever this opportunity is presented to them, they just jump on it.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can get these leaders to stop using that is not to allow them to use this kind of things on us. If a leader fails, regardless of who he is, even if it is your father and he fails, let that, if you're not going to call him out on it, don't attack someone for calling him out on it. Do not pretend that that's not because you are benefiting in some way or the other. So be upfront and say, okay, this is true. You know, the good things he did, share that. But you don't have to attack or feel that an attack on you, someone that looks like you or is from your tribe is an attack on you or your tribe. That's not the case. So as long as you don't move along away from this kind of mentality whereby we feel anytime someone that looks like you is attacked, it certainly means that everybody in that group is also attacked. That's not the case.
Exactly. Yes. You just made, because this is, I've been trying to say this thing since. That, see, do not fall into this group thing. There is a philosophy of individualism. There is a philosophy of individualism. And this is why the NSAS protest was the most shock to the government, because every single tribe, every single religion, every single creed, every single group, every single class supported that movement. And you can see how the government had no way to go. They tried to say, oh no, this is coming from the south. But they were not able to. Because one thing, why I tell people this, Lagos has not progressed because of it is a state of the Yoruba people. Lagos has progressed because of unity in diversity. That is why Lagos has progressed. That is why Lagos is the richest state in Nigeria. Because I don't come into a store and I'm asking, oh, the owner of this store, is the person Igbo, Yoruba? I don't care. Does that store have what I need? Yes, so take my money. This is the reason why Lagos has been able to grow and develop, because people of different culture, creed have come to Lagos with their own skill shunning the bigotry that comes with religious extremism and tribalism, and focusing on building. This is the reason why Lagos is so much better than many states, because the moment you're able to cut through tribalism, cut through religious bigotry, the next door you're opening is development. So, to your point, just so we can round up to your point, you made very, very important point as regards to the people and as regards to the leaders. And just to corroborate your point on the people, the people must understand something, right? We as Nigerians must look at things objectively. The black man is so sentimental, Hamid. The black man is so sentimental. It's so sentimental. We are so sentimental. We always are on the emotional side of the argument. We have to be logical. Yes. We have to be logical. Yes. We have to look things from a more logical perspective. Not everything is emotional. Now, what I'm trying to say is this: I don't expect an Igbo person to hang around Northerners. If that happens, fine. But do not think that because of you're not succeeding in a particular group of things, it's because of some Northern people. No. And if by chance a Northerner crosses your way and does something bad to you, it's not because he's a Northerner, it's because he's a wicked person. That's it. Do not attach the fact that he's a Northerner is the reason. Because the truth is this, I'll give you my own personal experience. I grew up in the East. I grew up in the East, and all I heard was, see, if he's a Muslim and he's a Northerner, he's wicked. They don't like you. And this stereotypical form of thinking was so in me. But guess what? I went to a very good school. I went to Covent University. Covent University is very diverse. I came to, I moved into Lagos with my family. And then I started working, and I'm working for a very good firm. And guess what? My manager is an Hausa man. And the man loves me to death. He has been the reason why I am very much focused on my career. He's the reason why I'm very much focused on my profession. And I'm like, see, look, if not for this exposure, I would have thought, well, is a weaker person. And guess what? One of the most nefarious acts against me, against my personality, has come from an evil person. One of the most nefarious acts, one of them, yes. So what do I say? Should I ignore the fact that nefarious act was committed against me because of the person committing such act is an evil person? No. So we have to, for the people, we have to focus on the individualistic personality of human nature, which is because I think therefore I am. I think you have to look at it from your own perspective. That's one. Now, two, for the leaders, we need to understand that the leaders in this country have no power but tribalism and religious bigotry. That is the truth. The moment the leaders in this country cast away tribalism and religious bigotry, we'll be able to progress. And that's why I tell young people, my friends and people around, and I'm encouraging people who are listening too, if you love this country so much and you are intellectual enough to understand the problem and to know where the solution is, please run for office. It may not be easy, but take a shot. Try. Because we cannot sit down in front of our screens and be cursing leaders when we have the ability to make change. Try. It may not be easy. You may not end up winning, but keep trying. This is how 1776 America's independence was achieved. So, Hamid, you have made very, very salient point on this. I mean, this is what I please, if you're listening, please share with your friends, share with family, share with people, share with Africans, share with white Caucasians, share with every single person. We need to understand these things. We need to take charge of our own ability to think and not fall into the trap of groupthink. We need to. So, Hamid, do you have any other things that maybe you wanted to say, but I didn't ask you? You have just 2 minutes to just, you know.
Yeah, so I just want to add 2 more things there to mirror what you said in terms of people. Like, you hear stories like this over and over and over again, which is people that live in a certain ecosystem have this belief of people outside the ecosystem, vis-a-vis people in the South believe that people in the North are evil, people in the North believe people in the South are untrustworthy. And the minute you step out of your bubble, you find that the opposite is It's always true. Like, there is no exception. Whenever you leave your little world where you are being told that this group is evil, when you step out of that world, you find out that the opposite is always true. I went to university with people of different from different backgrounds. Our class was a melting pot of every kind of tribe in our class. So we had to coexist. I have traveled to about 34 states in the country.
Yeah.
And everywhere I've been to, I've never been treated in terms of, oh no, like only Hausa people are nice to me, or only this kind of people are nice to me. No, people of all kinds, all walks of life have been nice. People have been bad. People have been mean. People have been rude. It's not particular to any group, and it's not because you are any group. It's just because that's who they are. I've met people when I was in Port Harcourt. The first time I was in Port Harcourt, I was very afraid. I was working on the street trying to find out where I wanted to go, and I saw a man with very red eyes. I was actually scared maybe he might rob me. And he was like, oh, what is wrong? And I asked him, I'm looking for this place. And he said, oh, this is it. He was just waving to me. And he kept asking, am I sure I understand? And he was so nice. I was surprised that, is it possible that someone from the South is genuinely kind? I was like, because of the mentality I went to Port Harcourt with, which is Port Harcourt is a very dangerous place, I was surprised to find that level of kindness. And the same thing has happened to me from Enugu to Lagos. Everywhere I've been to, I've met people that are kind. And I've also met people that are not so kind.
Exactly.
But again, it has never been because, oh, this person is Hausa, you're not Hausa, so that's the reason he is different or is disrespecting or things like that. No. So we have to stop fueling the conversation that says that the people from this particular ethnic group are this, and the people from this particular ethnic group are that. And this is why when I hear people saying, oh, Hausa people are kind in terms of honest traders and things like that, I'm always like, oh, sure, but I've seen traders that are from the South and they are very honest.
Yes.
People, like, I've met with traders that are Igbos, deep, like, thick Igbos, and their integrity is out of the roof. Like, when you find a very honest Igbo man, just know that is the pinnacle of integrity you'll ever find. So the conversation that says, oh, Hausa people are always the honest, no, it's not always the case. You can find someone that is very, very dodgy. Mm-hmm. I have met them. I work in the markets all the time. And I have people that are from everywhere that are all my customers, and we all deal with them differently. And they all have different attributes. So we have to move away from all the stereotypes, all the, you know, pigeonholing people that we do, and realize that people are different because of who they are, not because of where they are from or their background. So once we start to understand these things and expose ourselves to more narratives, and move away from the conversation that says, oh, I did this because this is a Yoruba man, so that's why it's acting like that. You have to stop that, even casually. Don't use such statements. Exactly. Even if it's just as a joke, don't use it.
Exactly.
It continues to permeate itself in the next generation. Exactly. Don't say things like, oh, this is an Igbo man, he doesn't do that, or this is how someone does it. Don't use these things.
We need to judge people offensive. By the content of their character.
Of their character, not by who they are, where they are from, sorry. So please, we need to, it starts with us. It always starts with us as a community, as a group of people, as the next generation. We need to shun away from this issue of tribalism. We cannot take it to our next level because we have social media to get to attack people without the consequence. It doesn't work like that. We will not develop if we become an independent country. Mm-hmm. If you divide the country into 10 groups, there will still be small groups that will fight that they want their independence.
Exactly.
Our freedom, our development does not come from the division of the country.
Exactly.
It comes with working together
to
develop our communities.
Exactly.
Let's develop these communities. Let's go back to the roots, grassroots.
Exactly.
This is where development is. Development is not about a modern urban areas. It's about functioning rural areas.
Exactly.
When your rural areas are functional, whereby people that do not know anybody are able to find work to do,
exactly,
to sustain themselves, and even create wealth. That is when you grow. It's not by building urban cities. It is by making sure that your rural areas are functional. That's where development comes from.
Yes,
that's my closing statement.
I agree with you. I agree with you so much, Hamid. I agree with you so much. So you have heard it. You have heard Hamid speak. You have heard us, you know, you have heard us dissect this topic, give very intricate conversation about tribalism and religion. This is not an academic conversation. This is not a conversation of you for us to start drawing out facts and figures and all. This is a conversation that is heartfelt. So next, so this week actually, this Saturday, because this was recorded, we had this meet on the 15th of February. So this Saturday, we're going to be having another conversation, Culture and Faith, the Hope for Greater Things. And Hamin is also going to be the one that's going to take us on this episode. So you all, thank you very much for listening to my podcast. Thank you very much for subscribing. Please share. Please share with your friends, share with your family. Please share with someone. This is important. This is a very important conversation. This is a very important conversation. Thank you very much, Hamid. Thank you all for watching. And I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good night.